Welcome to the Speculative Fiction Cantina with your host, S. Evan Townsend.
And hello, this is the Speculative Fiction Cantina. It's your weekly hypodermic injection of science fiction, fantasy, horror, alternate history, steampunk, cyberpunk, dieselpunk, all the punks. Anyway, and things weird and wonderful in the world of books and writers. I am your host. I am S. Evan Townsend. I write science fiction and fantasy novels that cause thrills and rapid page turning. The show is not about me. It's about our guests. And today on the Speculative Fiction Cantina, we're pleased to welcome writers Anthony R. Howard and P.I. Barrington. And if you'd like more information about my guests, it's on my blog at blog.s7townsend.com. That's blog.s7townsend.com. Which is a lot like S7.com, just with blog added. Anyway, Anthony, hello.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
How are you today? Afternoon.
Everything is cool. I'm happy to be here. Excited to talk to Speculative Fiction Cantina audience. Very excited.
All right. Right. It's great to have you here. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Anthony.
I am a very passionate author of fiction, especially speculative fiction. I don't have 9 novels like you, but I'm drinking milk. I'm going to get there. I have about 7. I am a technology consultant and Bible study teacher. I live in Atlanta now. I was with the Department of Defense for several years, and through that work, I bring what's really going on behind the scenes into the mold. So I also like to do neat and exotic things and break molds, not just in the literary world, but in the technology world as well. Also like to write books that have never been thought about. I also play basketball, and I'm also interested in traveling overseas and do that quite often.
Oh, great. Great. Well, it's great to have you here today. P.I., hello. Oh, yeah, sure.
Hello.
P.I., hello. How are you today?
How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
I am great.
Good. Tell us a little bit about yourself, P.I.
Okay. I was raised pretty much my entire life in California, and when you do that, it's kind of like required that you work in the entertainment industry. And from a little kid, I wanted to work in music, and so everything I ever did was, you know, geared towards, focused on that. And I blame it on the Beatles.
Anthony.
Yes.
Tell us about the invisible enemy, Black Fox. That's a great title, by the way.
One serious book. So, based off of my time in the Department of Defense, I wrote a book that I had always wanted to read, but had never been written. It's a journey for the reader. So, all the stuff you see in the movies, right, is about the Department of Defense and what really goes on. It's pretty far out there. So one of my goals in writing is to broaden the experience of my reader community and add to the literary art form. So I believe this book not only presents a fascinating story, but I want to bring some value to the reader aside from entertainment, like what's really going on behind the scenes and what you don't see in the news. So I believe that's one of the key differences in my style of writing, because everyone loves to be entertained. I'm obviously going to do that. I truly enjoy it. But there are also a lot of people that value riveting, thought-provoking ideas. So topics where you finish the book and you want to know more. Motifs that make you want to do a bit of web surfing on your own and dive even deeper. So, for example, a lot of the government agencies that you've never heard of are in there, and they're real. These are not even classified government agencies. Like, this is not WikiLeaks. I'm not going to jail. But they're things that were classified for so long, and now they're unclassified, but no one's ever heard of them. The movie doesn't talk about the types of agencies, these types of weapons, and it almost sounds like a different future, but it happens today, right? Weapons doesn't go through walls, right? Defense systems, and I worked on these different projects. So pretty cool stuff. Pretty cool stuff there for what the readers tell me, right?
There you go. That's perfect.
Okay. All right. We'll keep right here then.
All righty. Okay. So what genre would you peg the Invisible Enemy Black Fox as?
It could be considered speculative fiction because in the book, it's what would happen if all of America's new enemies, so your ISIS and all your other stuff, aligned with our old enemies. And a lot of that is happening today. So whether you call it speculative fiction, action, espionage, thriller, I mean, it's been called all that. But it's in that exhilarating, fast-paced, heart-thumping genre.
Right, and you're playing a series, so they know that there's at least one more book in this series.
Yeah, so there's The Invisible Enemy 2, Vendetta, was actually recently launched, and I wanted to hit the bestseller list just like the first one did, and this is a continuation, so exact same characters, but I dive deeper into some of the characters and bring even more players and technology. And I like it, actually like it a little bit better because I don't have to set the table on this one. I created something special in the first book. But the sequel takes you into a deeper, grittier level of the game. I mean, here you meet mercenaries, the aristocrats, the secret societies, and then their alarming role in the political infrastructure and the spy game. So sequel is definitely not for lighthearted, and there's some surprises that are knock your socks off. So in my opinion, it's a perfect sequel.
Okay. Well, and you're not prejudiced at all because you wrote it.
Definitely not biased. Definitely not biased.
Yeah. PI, tell us about for the Breed Chronicles.
The Breed Chronicles. You know, it's funny because Anthony was talking about that, and when I started the Breed Chronicles, I was actually going to have something like that because I was going to try for like a post-political dystopian story, and I started writing it, and it ran away with me into another story. But it's really funny that you said that, and it just turned into this weird, like, saga at this point. It's almost a family saga. I call it near future because I never place it any farther than like 100 years into the future. Of the book reviewers, the ones that I've dealt with in the past, they're all kind of like, they don't charge money, but they offer like services along with reviewing. So
right.
It's kind of, you know, which I understand. I mean, when people, you know, reading and especially reviewing books, it takes a large chunk, you know, out of your time. So I can understand that they want to somehow get compensated, you know, beside a book.
Yes.
You also have a book called The Devil's Diary, The Coming. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so that is... That is a very heavy book. That is about the second coming of Jesus Christ. So in the book, Son of Man returns, but it's not what you expect. So this is the book that actually got me my first book deal. I was decided to come out with the kind of the Invisible Enemy series, spy technology thriller, because of my background with the technology Department of Defense and degrees and awards behind my name and spoke at technology conferences on a regular basis. But I'm not a famous minister. You know, I don't have a church with, you know, thousands of members, right? I don't even have a theological degree. I'm a guy who's passionate about Christianity, studies the Bible, and that just wasn't a good enough platform for the publisher, so it didn't come out, and I actually started my own publishing company so I could put this book out. It was that important to me. And
wow.
It's a journey for the reader. So my first book, right, I wrote the book that I always wanted to read, but you know, it had never been read. With this book, I wrote the book that had never been written. Right? mean, you have to ask yourself a question during the book. Right? Are you ready to face your sin? Right? For many people, the answer will be no, which makes the book an even deeper journey as they realize where they fall within the dial of good and evil, and each reader will face their own internal journey. You know, it doesn't matter whether you're familiar with Jesus Christ or God or any religion. It's a journey for the reader to want to look inside themselves. Though the book is called Devil's Diary, the book is not about devil or evil. The second part of the title is the focus, which is the coming. So it really is about biblical prophecy. And obviously there's hundreds of interpretations and translations, and I really put them into three main categories during my studies, and that's the past interpretations, meaning that some believe that the second coming of Jesus has already happened. Right? Second group is the present interpretation, meaning based on what's happening now, the second coming is imminent. And the third group is the future, which pretty much follows, which says, hey, Jesus is coming off far in a distant future someplace. I focus on the present. So when P.I. was saying, right, mere present, I focus on that genre, the present interpretation. So in the book, the Son of Man returns, and it seems to be, right, present day, not too far from today, but it's not about the rapture, right? It's not like the Left Behind series. It's really about the battle between good and evil and God versus his enemies.
All right. And so that you made a publishing company to publish that.
That is correct. I did. That was the motivation behind starting my publishing company, Black Fox Imprint. But the one of the driving or the financial driving factors was what P.I. mentioned when she said there's a lot of no one really helps new authors, right? Everyone kind of has an angle, just like you said with the reviewers. Okay, they will review your book, but they want you to buy their service or something in return, which, right, we can all understand. Same kind of thing with publishing companies, right? A lot of them take a large chunk and want the rights to your book, and even when they stop marketing you, and most of them don't anyway, they don't market you. You have to do your own marketing. They're still taking a chunk out of your revenue forever. And to me, that makes no sense, right? If I'm doing the marketing and I wrote the book, why is somebody continuing to take the dunks out? Especially if it was a print-on-demand house where you paid them to do it in the first place, you know, whether you traditionally published. So it was more of a yes, it was that gave me the idea of starting my own publishing company. And then now the Black Fox and Vendetta are under, you know, Black Fox Imprint. Simply from a financial standpoint, it just didn't make sense to not do anything else. As you already know, because you have, right, this is your 10th book out, right?
Yeah.
So I'm sure you already figured out where, if you kind of do it yourself, even if you sell less books, it doesn't matter because you're getting the monster size of the financial benefit, so you don't have to sell as many books to do well.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, the whole Treasures of Space series, of which you're tenth book is the third book, but that's not confusing. I self-published those under my own publishing company. My other seven books were all published by my small press publisher.
Oh, wait, so you published all 10? That means you're rich. Loan me $10.
Oh, I would.
I'm a teaser.
I know. T.I., you have stories on Wattpad for free. Do you find that helps with marketing your books, or is that something you recommend?
Well, you know, it's so different, the marketing of it. It used to be, when my first series came out, it was a really near future crime thriller, and that was, my God, way back in 2009, and that, you know, you could order like 100 books from the publisher and just give them out, and like Anthony was saying, I know that it takes a lot of time, but they, like you said, a lot of times they'll want, well, you know, I'll do a blog tour and I'll have, they'll give you like a package thing, and it's changed so much, and it's very difficult. You know, you get a core of like faithful readers and reviewers. You just have to try to do the best you can. It's, you know, keep track of what's going on and how publishing is changing again. First there was, you know, the advent of the self-publishing ebook first, and, you know, the reviewers were all, oh, I'll take your book, I'll review it. Everybody was very open, and then it changed again to where they want some kind of compensation, you know, for reviewing all the books. So it's kind of a difficult trend, and a time. It's just in flux right now. I think that I read somewhere that if you're a writer and you contribute to anthologies, then it tends to get, you know, your story tends to get distributed more because you've got other authors working on it too. But I don't know, this book, all my books are just kind of like, you know, kind of gritty, kind of dark, you know, for romance. It's not really romance because it's, you know, I'm not talking about six-pack abs and, you know, icy blue eyes. I don't do that, even though my first publisher tried to make me do that. So it's not, I hate to say romance because it is, but it's not the typical, like I said, you know, the big muscles and all that kind of stuff. Right. And especially with Breed, you know, he's the anti-hero. You know, I mean, this guy has no redeeming qualities when he starts out. You know, he's badder than the bad guys. So, and that's, I think that is more, you know, I wanted to see if I could write someone who was not an anti-hero, you know, who was just deep. I mean, to me, he's kind of like Vin Diesel with, like, box braids, you know. So, even Vin Diesel, I think most of his characters are just anti-hero good guys. So, yeah. I have a dedicated little fan base. So, but Anthony's stuff sounds really, really good. That's why I was so silent. I mean, his books just sound great.
Yeah. Well, both your books sound great. Anthony, you've written a lot about technology, and you know, you've been published in computer mags and stuff. Does that influence your fiction writing, your technological background?
Absolutely. Technology is so pervasive now that you know, you can almost go anywhere with it. And then, you know, add some imagination to that, right? You can create realms that aren't even there. So, for example, in Devil's Diary, there's what we call a smart chip. And in that smart chip, you can have your user ID or your, what they call now, social security numbers, and you can get credit history, buy, sell, location, all that stuff can be in a smart chip. And a smart chip is injected, into people who want them. Now, in the Bible, in Revelation, it speaks of the mark, and I equate that technology with the mark in the Bible. Now, that technology actually does exist today, but I just take it a step further. So imagine the chip that's in your credit card, right, implanted in your hand, right? That's not too far off, but it's not here yet. In Black Fox, the technology that's being developed, I bring that to fruition. So some of the things you see in movies, right, are taken from developing technology, but I take a technology that's being developed and then bring it to that next level. So, for example, you probably never heard of speed of light weapons that can be fired from satellites, right? Development, but you know, varying degrees of productivity and effectiveness. So in my book, we talk about speed of light weapons and that technology being harnessed into handguns and things like that, with ultralight, where, right, there's no point of impact, no noise, no sound, no smell, right, things like that that can be brought to bear, right, in an arms race or even in used by spies. So the technology and the conferences I speak at, the technology that I work on, the projects that have actually happened are really huge influence. Fortunately, a lot of them can also save lives. So, for example, virtual reality, what they call now VR, which is if I put glasses over you or PI or anyone in your audience, and then I can show a movie to them.
Right.
And to them it will be real life. But I can take that technology and I can design the enemy's base. So we're going to go over there to the enemy and I had blueprints of their base. I can train soldiers. And before we even get on the plane to go do whatever, they have already practiced raiding that base hundreds and hundreds of times with artificial intelligence. So when they get over to do it, they already know every turn, every corner, every shadow, every door. And it's not their first time, right? And casualties can remain low.
I know, I love it.
I know. You're blowing me away, Anthony.
So all this stuff is bring it to bear, and not just the books, but I want each reader to know, right, not just what's out there, but I want them to be able to learn on that. Even if you put a Google some of the keywords in the book, you can find out, hey, this exists. I mean, it's cool, right? Stealth technology where you can have a fleet of choppers that you can't even see on radar. You can only see them on eyesight, and by then it's too late. It's 70 choppers upon you. But anyway, technology really influenced a lot of the stuff.
It amazes me they can make a chopper that's quiet. I don't know how they do that.
Pretty amazing.
Probably the way to do that is highly classified. So don't tell me if you know. And now it's time for your shot of science, the jigger of scientific news. Today's story comes from space.com, and the link to the full story is on my blog. An international team of astronomers connected a number of telescopes together on Earth in hopes of making the first image of a black hole. Now, black holes are regions of space which the pull of gravity is so strong that nothing, not even light, can escape. Their existence was predicted by mathematically by Carl Schwarzschild in 1915 as a solution to equations posed in Albert Einstein's theory of general relativity. Astronomers have had circumstantial evidence for many decades that supermassive black holes, a million to a billion times more massive than our sun, lie at the heart of large galaxies. That's because they can see the gravitational pull they have on stars orbiting around the galactic center. When overfed with material from the surrounding galactic environment, they also detect.
This is the Speculative Fiction Cantina on Rightstream Radio.
And we are back with our guests, Anthony R. Howard and P.I. Barrington. Anthony, we did something a little different with Anthony. He sent me an audio file. Do you want to introduce this before I play it?
Sure. I hope to really wow all your listeners. And I mentioned before that I pushed the envelope with technology. So for the Invisible Enemy Black Fox, I really wanted to take it even off the page using some of the technology. So what I did was create not only an audiobook, but a theater experience. So traditional audiobooks are really boring to many people. That's why I kind of stopped listening. One guy reads for 20 hours, especially with the younger generation, the Facebook, Twitter generation. That's not really appealing for them. So, right, they can lull you, a lot of us to sleep. In the Invisible Enemy Black Fox audiobook, a new genre is open. So it's got thousands of expertly placed sound effects, a cast of actors reading the major characters. I am the narrator, and there's tons of movie scores created for every scene and chapter, giving the audiobook a surreal movie-like theater experience in addition to the exhilarating story. So I'm going to play the first 5 minutes of the audiobook, and hopefully I'll be able to wow your audience. So
I listened to part of this earlier today, so yeah, starts off a little soft, so you might think that, but it gets better. It gets louder. Here we go.
Cold War era, the KGB, the former Soviet Union's equivalent of the CIA, ruled using cutthroat rings of highly trained intelligence operatives. During this period, the Soviet arms count was estimated at over 40,000 nuclear weapons. Because of the breakdown of the Soviet Union and its KGB, over 250,000 skilled Soviet spies, strategically planted around the world, suddenly found themselves out of work. However, for many of the displaced agents, it was still business as usual, as many of those unclaimed 250,000 spies were children. An enemy invisible to nearly any defense mechanism.
Get in and get out. What do you think this is, some kind of game? Devin snarled. I just thought I do the thinking. All you do is what I say, Devin coldly replied. Garrett was silent. He looked into the boss's cold eyes and saw no understanding, no mercy, and no patience. There was no compassion between the two men. In and out, sir, was Garrett's meek reply. But it was just an act. There was no fear in Garrett's heart. Take teams A and F and complete the operation, Devin said. You will signal Man 3 at 9:15 a.m., enter the facility at 9:18, expedite the operation exactly as planned, and exit at 9:21. Are there any questions, Mr. Garrett? The boss's tone told him there had better not be. No, sir. Good. Team A will be waiting for you at the designated rendezvous point. The truck will be with them. Nightshade leads Team F at your signal. She already has the keys in her possession. Dismissed. Yes, sir. Garrett turned to leave. Garrett. Yes? One more thing. Teams A and F are to be totally oblivious to each other. Is that understood? Of course, sir.
Sorry, everyone. That Pulitzer competition belongs to me.
Dorian Valentine exclaimed on her way to work. As she walked past the doors of the elevator, she received a standing ovation, and she welcomed it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Dorian, some people are here to see you in the boss's office, said Frederick Carson, one of her co-workers.
What? The Pulitzer is here already.
Good morning, Miss Valentine, a stranger in a gray suit said. He stepped in close and locked his arm in hers. He then started to walk quickly, leading her to the editor-in-chief's office.
In a separate, windowless van parked on a Washington side street, Kalisa Leonilla, known to her team as Nightshade, rebriefed Team F on the operation at hand.
All right, take a good look at this picture,
Nightshade instructed.
Everyone and everything else is expendable.
Get your hands off of me. What is going on? And who the hell do you think you are putting your hands on me? I ought to pick up the phone right now and call my attorney. You better start explaining yourself right now.
Sit down, Dorian, one of the men said.
I'm fine. Standing.
Miss Valentine, we're from the CIA, he continued. This is about the article you wrote that is printed in this morning's paper. I'm sure you know you've created absolute congressional pandemonium.
Just doing my job. And what's your name?
Valentine was cut off by the sounds of terrified screams coming from outside. Get down, Turner yelled to Valentine. Clack drew his piece. Automatic gunfire was heard over the screams, followed by shattered glass and chaos.
Dorian Valentine.
That was, you got a new concept there, because you have actors doing the voices, and you got sound effects and music, and it ended, and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's over.
So that's the purpose. So that's, you know, I was trying to cater to, right, because people now, they, you know, back in the day, audiobooks were mostly on tape, and then came CDs. And now people listen to stuff on their phones and MP3 players and in their cars. So I wanted to create something that, you know, you would want to listen to, you know, while you're exercising or while you're doing chores. You can put your little MP3 in play or while you're walking the cat or doing anything. It's a really, you know, a portable movie in your ear,
yeah.
Just no video.
All right.
Yeah, and production was very good.
Yeah, exactly. And your mind will provide the video. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Even
I had to stop listening to audiobooks in my car because when I passed the cop doing a little bit over the speed limit, and I didn't even know he was there because I was too wrapped up in the book. We're not going to do this anymore. P.I., you mentioned that you have a bunch of books with a bunch of different publishers. Are you having rights issues with them? Are they out of print, or are they still available?
Well, my first trilogy was The Future Imperfect, and that the rights literally, like several months ago, just reverted back to me. So that'll have to be re-released. And the other... The other publisher was Smart Rhino, and I just did a short story in their anthology. And right now, The Breed Chronicles is with First Realm, so it just takes a while to get the rights back. But I'm going to try and re-release Future Imperfect after I finish this book. Breed 2 for First Realm. So.
Great. Anthony, you were named the number one IT superhero. So who named you the number one IT superhero, and why did they do that?
So it was a couple of reasons. So it was the InfoWorld, which is the Wall Street Journal of the IT world, and there was some really important projects that I was involved in. One of them was what they call the Dismounted Soldier Project, and it uses virtual reality to save United States soldiers' lives. And when we were, in sandy areas, when, you know, some places would be bombed and we would go and try and, do what American soldiers do and save lives and fight the good fight. A lot of times, who they call insurgents, they don't have uniforms. They dress as civilians, and they will sit up in windows and start shooting at our soldiers. And then they will disappear into a crowd of civilians. And you know, we can't open fire on a crowd of women and children because that sniper disappeared. I mean, that's not, those aren't usually the rules of engagement. So what can you do? So what I helped design, and I wasn't the programmer, but I laid the hardware foundation, designed the hardware foundation to pass the Army's Critical Design Review to set up a virtual reality simulation where you could create bases, cities, streets, rooms, whatever you want. And in that simulation, you could put artificial intelligence, snipers, You can also put vehicles, Humvees. So the soldiers, the first pilot was in Fort Benning here in Georgia. They were able to, you know, a large room, and the soldiers would put on their VR glass, virtual reality equipment, and they would have their packs and their machines and their weapons, and they have their radios, and they communicate through the virtual reality, and they can practice sweeping out that city, and they know where all the buildings are, where somebody could be hiding, so they can go clear out the city because they've done it, you know, many, many, many times before even getting on the plane. So if I come to, you know, a city and I already know where the hiding spots are, I can go sweep them out because, you know, the artificial intelligence might have got me on the game before, so now it's not going to happen again. So by the time, you know, we see it 100 times, or somebody on the plane to go over there, a lot of folks come back, right? Lower.
Yeah.
A lot lower catching. So that was one of them. Another one was solving a problem for a bank, but that one's boring compared to the one I just explained. So, you know, people were only losing money.
Yeah. I was just thinking those snipers up in the window, what they need is a weapon that shoots like pink, fluorescent paint, and shoot it up at that window and paint them pink, and that way he can't get away in the crowd. So I got two questions for both of you guys. Let me start with Anthony. This is one of my hard questions, so be prepared. Why should anyone buy your books?
You can go first.
Okay.
I like Electra.
You like Electra. Mine is not. It's not too technical. And someone on Goodreads the other day was saying, "Oh, I don't like the character driven," but mine is more. Usually character-driven and their motivations and their conflicts. But talking about technology, in Future Imperfect, I had a, because that was like in Las Vegas, I had a police chief who had use of like a foam sedative, and they could shoot it out at people, and it would go into their skin and absorb, and they'd be out without injuring anyone. But Breed is more, I don't know. Like I said, I wanted a bad guy, not a bad good guy.
Anthony, your turn. Why should anybody buy your books?
Because it's different from anything ever written. And let me explain. So one of the reasons I can't enjoy movies is because I can usually predict them because basically they're all the same, right? So you have introduction, rising action, climax, falling action, conclusion. So based on where they are in the movie, I already know what's going to happen. I haven't seen the movie. So I don't follow that script at all. I keep you on the edge of your seat. As you saw with the Black Fox audiobook, right, there was gunplay in the first 5 minutes. And I also aim to educate you. In Black Fox, it's technology, but in Devil's Diary, it's about the kingdom. And I take it even deeper, right, because I that's what I feel. Let me periscope up for a minute. So there is a big difference between a Christian author and an author who's a Christian. And I didn't know the difference before I started my own publishing company. So a quote-unquote Christian author, there are certain rules you must follow in order to be labeled a Christian author. Interesting, the rules have nothing to do with Christ. You know, rules like no kissing below the neck, no drinking, no smoking, no divorce, no lying, all that stuff. To me, that's unrealistic. I've never seen life like that outside of a house, right? No consumption of alcohol? Anyway. So broke away from that model to not only embrace more people, but to present a realistic story and connect with folks. So my job is to connect and keep you on the edge of your seat. I think that's why anyone will enjoy and should buy the books. You'll be entertained, you'll be connected into the story, and you definitely will learn.
All right. What motivates and inspires you?
You know, I like bringing a new perspective. Right? A lot of folks doing the same things and you know, not just literary, but in movies and then even TV, the same things, just recycle, same show over and over again. So bringing a new perspective. Most books, movies, et cetera, they focus on good guys versus the bad guys, or antagonists versus the protagonists, and I blur the lines. So it's never a simple good versus evil type of design. So the characters are like, you know, the multidimensional characters, because that's real life. So I'm motivated by bringing a new perspective to literary and adding to the literary art form and broadening experiences of the reader community. That really, really motivates me.
Okay. That sounds great. P.I., we're almost at the end of the show. Is there anything we forgot to ask you about? Is there anything you want to make sure we say before we're done?
No. I just make a really killer Thai spaghetti. and that's about it. I'm sorry, that's it.
All right.
So,
Anthony, well, I want some spaghetti.
Yeah, now I want spaghetti too. Anthony, anything you want to get out before the end of the show?
If anybody wants to find me, I'm at anthonyrhoward.com. Easily available, not that unapproachable guy. If anyone has more questions or wants to know more, please feel free to reach out. AnthonyRHoward.com. Don't forget the R.
Don't forget the R. All right. That's great. I'd like to thank my guest, Anthony R. Howard and P.I. Barrington. Again, more information about both these writers is on my blog at blog.s7townsend.com. There's links to their websites, links to their social media, biographies and pictures and book covers and all sorts of fun stuff, so check that out at blog.s7townsend.com. Thank you, Anthony.
Thank you.
Great having you here. And thank you, P.I.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was great having you on the show as well. And thank you to all our listeners. Everybody have a great weekend and happy Mother's Day.
This has been the Speculative Fiction Cantina on Rightstream Radio.